We're in week three of a series we've been running called The Summer of Love. And I did hope that it would be sunny to go with it because that makes it a lot easier, of course, to speak about it. But this Summer of Love has taken on us on a little journey through 1 John and particularly chapter 4 so far. So I want to just read you some verses again from 1 John chapter 4. It's the first letter of John. You'll find it near the back of the Bible if you're still looking for it. But John has some amazing words that really just echo his experiences of Jesus as well. So 1 John chapter 4, I'm going to read verses 7 to 12 and then 19 to 21. This is what John writes to the church back then and to us today. Dear friends, let us love one another, for love comes from God. Everyone who loves has been born of God and knows God. Whoever does not love does not know God. Because God is love. This is how God showed his love among us. He sent his one and only Son into the world that we might live through him. This is love. Not that we loved God, but that he loved us and sent his Son as an atoning sacrifice for our sins. Dear friends, since God so loved us, we also ought to love one another. No one has ever seen God, but if we love one another, God lives in us, and his love is made complete in us. Then on to verse 19. We love because he first loved us. Whoever claims to love God yet hates a brother or sister is a liar. For whoever does not love their brother and sister who they have seen cannot love God whom they have not seen. And he has given us this command. Anyone who loves God must also love their brother and sister. Amen. Well, what a week it's been. Not only, of course, for the weather, but also for some sad things that have happened. And this time last week, of course, we were all gearing up for the Euro 2020 final or the Wimbledon final or whatever other final you were interested in. And we were getting ready, of course, for the success of the England team, this young, dynamic England team. But sadly, within a few hours of us meeting here last Sunday morning, it seemed as if hate had taken over instead of love. It seemed that the headlines after last Sunday's match became headlines about hate. After the final between England and Italy, the hatred and anger shown towards those three young black players has shocked us, even if it perhaps didn't surprise us. Because hatred is not far from the surface. It doesn't take much to show its face. Thankfully, there has been the opposite response from the majority of people who have stood with those who have been abused and threatened, who have been and actively condemning those who would say and act and write such vile and divisive words. But I think it is a reminder of the challenge we all face in how we think and how we talk towards and how we act towards other people. It's a challenge we have to face, not passively, but purposefully, turning the tables on all those who seek to hate with a response of love. Because after all, that's how Jesus lived. And if we want to live as Jesus lived, we're going to have to love as Jesus loved. Because Jesus turns hate and division and exclusion into love and unity and inclusion, not only by what he said, but also by how he showed it. Now, we've been looking through these verses in John's first letter. Now, there is a little bit of scholarly contention about whether these letters were written by the same John who wrote the gospel. But there are, I think you would agree, some real similarities and very similar ideas that settle between the letter and the gospel as well. And so many scholars seem to settle on the same authorship as well. So I'm going with them, if that's okay, to assume that 1 John was written by John, who wrote the gospel as well. And I think, once again, with the passage that I just read, I think we can see how what John had to say in this letter matches up what John recorded in his gospel as well. As he encountered Jesus, as he saw Jesus face to face, the reality of who Jesus was. Four times in 1 John, John talks about the fact that anyone who loves God cannot hate a brother or sister. He also says that anyone who doesn't love doesn't know God, because God is love. In fact, if you don't love, John says, you don't love God. And if you love God, then you must love your brother and sister. It's pretty clear, isn't it? Or it seems to me, anyway. But how did John make that connection? How did he make that connection and was able to speak so positively, so powerfully about the need for us to love our brother and sister? Well, I want to take you back to the upper room. I want to take you back to the night of Passover, just before Jesus was betrayed. John chapter 13, verse 1. John records this. Jesus knew the hour had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father, and having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. I love that phrase. I love that little phrase at the end. He loved them to the end. How did he do that? Well, he got up from the table. He took off his outer clothing. He wrapped a towel around his waist. He poured water into a basin, and he began to wash his disciples' feet. That's how he did it. All of his disciples. Judas, who would betray him. Peter, who would deny him. And all the others who would desert him. But Jesus loved them to the end. He knew what would happen. He told them what was going to happen. But he chose to love them to the end of the story. He loved them as a reflection of the Father's love. He could do no other than wash their feet. And so, having emptied himself of all but love when he came to this world, he loved them when it would have been easier to hate them. As Paul writes in Philippians, he made himself nothing. He humbled himself because of love. Isn't that the sort of love that we would love to see? We would love to see in action. We would love to act in that way ourselves. The kind of love we'd all love to encounter every day with every person. And even though Judas was soon to spit in his face and throw it all back at him, to sell his soul to the devil, even though Peter would deny him three times, even though it couldn't get any darker for Jesus in those moments, he made it clear. He said, "You cannot come where I am going," John chapter 13, 33, "but you can stay here and show this same love to the people who will hurt you, let you down, and hate you as well. That's your choice. You can't go with me where I'm going, but you can stay here and you can continue this journey that I've shown you what it's all about." "This is what I want you to do," Jesus said, "while I'm gone." And Jesus then gave them what he said was a new commandment. New meaning something that hadn't been said or shown in this way ever before. This command now had flesh on, rather than just words that the people said. "This is how you do it," he said. "Love one another. And if you do this, everyone is going to know that you're my followers." This will be the distinguishing mark of saying who you are. Everyone will know that you are my followers if you love one another. "Even though I'm going," Jesus said, "and I'll be gone, people are going to see me through you if you will love one another. And even if they hate you, just keep on loving them." Now, a few days earlier to that moment, the crowds in Jerusalem had rolled out the red carpet for Jesus to come in. And now Jesus was saying, "You need to roll out the welcome mat, so that others can be embraced, so that others can come in to this story as well. Not to be walked all over, of course, not to be walked all over, but to welcome. to welcome those who perhaps you wouldn't normally welcome. In fact, those who hate you and those who persecute you, I want you to welcome them in as well. So how do you do it? Well, this morning it's as simple as ABC, if that's okay. I had to be simple today, otherwise the sun's going to get too much for me. So firstly, attract people, don't repel them. Attract people. Jesus got up, he made the first move. He moved towards his followers. He didn't wait for them, he got up and he moved towards them. He didn't wait for anyone else to do it. And Peter got a bit upset in this moment, but it was too late because Jesus had taken the first move. He had to submit, Peter had to submit humbly to Jesus, washing his feet. And Jesus wasn't repelled by the smell or the dirt. His aim wasn't clean feet on that day. His aim was to soften their hearts. John 15 says, "Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done to you." Now, please don't get anxious, those in the car park. I haven't got a bowl of water. I'm not going to come and wash your feet because some of you don't like your feet. And I know how embarrassing it would be for you to take your shoes and socks off today. But we get the picture, don't we? We get the image. To stoop down humbly and to take the first move. This isn't a competition to see who can do it first. This is a command from Jesus. To attract, don't repel. Move towards, don't push people away. Yeah, we're living in a culture that seems to be moving away from one another, where differences are highlighted, where perhaps even they're exploited for somebody's own ends in order to create division deliberately. We've seen it time and time again. It's happened throughout history. Most countries have been affected by this sense of division, but it seems particularly prevalent today. Whether a refugee seeking a welcome, whether a stranger seeking a friend, whether a child wanting home, whether a vulnerable person seeking security, it seems as if we major on division rather than on acceptance. But what if we chose to move towards one another, to take time to listen to someone's story? So can I urge you to attract, get connected to other people? That's where you find your strength. You move closer to them, not away from them. In that way, you'll grow taller and taller. You know, the giant redwood tree, I don't have one in my garden, but I'm glad I don't, because apparently they can grow to over 400 feet high, a 37-floor story skyscraper. It's incredible. How are they able to grow so high? Well, they have amazing roots, but more than having amazing roots, do you know what they do? They intertwine their roots with other trees. And so as the roots spread out, they're intertwining with each other all the time. And of course, that creates even more strength. That's how they can grow taller. You know, when we move closer to people, when we intertwine our lives, when we attract people and become part of their story, do you know, we all get stronger together. And we'll be able to grow taller and be able to look more like Jesus in the process. So attract, don't repel. Secondly, build bigger tables. Does B come next in the ABC? A, B. Yeah, I think it does. So build bigger tables. Jesus not only washed Judas's feet, he shared bread with him as well. The table was big enough for everyone to sit around that day. I don't know about you, but many childhood memories, but the one I have is a drop leaf table. Does anybody remember drop leaf tables? I mean, it had a 4 mica top on it. Anybody remember 4 mica? It was black and white. It was in the kitchen of the house where I grew up as a kid. And the great thing about it was that if somebody came, you could just lift it up and you'd create a bigger table in a moment, wouldn't you? And my mum and dad were constantly doing that because we always had people come. I don't think I liked it all the time, but you know what? It taught me something really important. There's always enough room for people. We seem to be so good at building walls, don't we? But what if we could build bigger tables instead? After all, Jesus was a carpenter, not a bricklayer, wasn't he? Nothing against bricklayers, of course, but he built tables, not walls. How many times in the accounts of the life of Jesus do we see him sitting at a table with other people? Tax collectors, Pharisees, the sick, the broken, the bereaved, the excluded. And he did it so often that his enemies accused him of being a glutton and a drunkard. And it was like Jesus wore that label. It was a badge of honor for Jesus to be accused of being a glutton and a drunkard. In fact, Jesus said in Luke 7, "The Son of Man came eating and drinking." sitting around tables with people who no one else invited. You know, let's build bigger tables, because if we're going to live like Jesus lived, we need a love like Jesus loved. Attract, not don't repel, build bigger tables, cheer other people on. It's been really sad this year to hear about school sports days. I think it was true last year as well, where parents weren't allowed to go to school sports days. No one to cheer them on. And I bet they didn't run as fast. I bet they didn't compete as well, because no one was there to cheer them on. Hebrews 10:24 says, let us consider how we may spur one another on towards love and good deeds. To spur people on, to cheer them on, to provoke them, to incite them, to irritate them enough that they will do it. Are you good at irritating people enough so that they'll do what you want them to do? Kids, when you're a kid, you know, I'm not gonna say anything else, otherwise I won't get my dinner. But Hebrews says, let's provoke people enough. Let's irritate them enough to good deeds. Let's encourage other people to do good things, to love other people. Cheer other people on. I did say it was only ABC, but I had a D as well. Do you mind if I have a D as well this morning? Attract, not repel. Cheer. I've gone wrong with the alphabet now. Build bigger tables. Cheer other people on. The D, and this is my last one, deposit life in people. Deposit life in them. There's nothing better than finding someone who doesn't squeeze the life out of you every time you're in their presence. And there's nothing better than finding someone who feeds life into you every time you meet them. Who would you rather be with? The people who suck life out of you, or the people who invest life in you, who deposit life in you? I'm sure if we went round this morning, if everyone at home would just write down the name of someone who deposited life in your life, you'll remember that name forever, won't you? People who just believed in you, invested in you, stood with you when things were tough, who lifted you up, who picked you off the ground when you fell down. Deposit life in people. People who say something or do something that makes you feel good. We all know who they are. But what if we could be the people who deposited life in others? There's no better feeling of encouragement than when someone praises you for something you've done, even if you think it's that small. It's even better when somebody does that to you when somebody else is listening. You know, with kids, I've always tried to make it a thing, you know, to talk to kids and cheer them on, really, or deposit life in them when their parents are there, because sometimes parents, we're not so great at pouring life into our kids. Yeah, we spend a lot of time telling them off for doing things. When they come home from school and they've got 9 out of 10 in their maths test, the first thing you want to know is, why did you get the 10th one wrong? You never cheer them on. Well, often you don't cheer them on for the 9 they got right. So I wonder if we could be people who deposit life, who say the sort of words that Jesus might have said to people, who built them up and encouraged them to show love in words and deposit life. Jesus said, John 15:12, my command is this, love each other as I have loved you. If you want to live as Jesus lived, you've got to love as Jesus loved. Love each other as I have loved you. John saw it in action many times, and around that table that night before Jesus was betrayed, he saw it again. He saw it as Jesus washed the disciples' feet. He saw it as Jesus broke bread with them that night. And he saw it at the end of the story as Jesus died and as he rose again. There's too much hate in the world, far too much. And perhaps we could be the people who begin to turn that around, one word, one action at a time. Attract people with love. Build a table, not a wall. Cheer people on and deposit life. That's the sort of love Jesus has shown to me and to you. So Jesus said, if you want to be my disciples, I need you to go and do the same. And we today can commit to share it with the people we'll bump into. You know, we're going to remember that night when Jesus broke bread with his followers around that table that was big enough for Judas and Peter and the rest of them to sit at. when Jesus told them that he was going to give his life for them, he was going to love them to the end. He wasn't going to give up in that moment. So we're going to do the same in the open air today, in the outdoors, but we're going to come together. Before we do that, we're going to sing this great song, "Here is love vast as the ocean." So if you'd like to stand, please do. If you haven't got any bread or juice at home, or go and grab a biscuit and a cup of water or something, and come back and we'll share communion together in a moment. Let's stand and let's sing.